Rob Pratt. He is the most interesting man on radio.
I don't usually listen to talk radio on the weekends, but when I do, I choose Rob Pratt. Stay listening, my friends. This is News Radio 1020 KDKA.
You know, I just Facebooked Drew Monroe with his band. The guy can, I mean, this is the kind of kid in the neighborhood that you just wanted to whoop up on the playground because you were so damn jealous of the guy. He is the Cecil B. DeMille of television commercial directing in this city. Could have went national, but he just loves his beloved butler, loves his parents, loves his wife, and he loves being on the Rob Pratt Show, even if it is in the 5 o'clock hour. And why is he here? He is a man of many, many, many talents.
The Riddler contrives his plots like artichokes. You have to strip off spiny leaves to reach the heart.
But surely, Batman, there must be some sort of political plot against Moldavia, that exploding cake.
I'm Errors, Commissioner. A clever device to make you call me in.
But why? Why would he want that? You're his deadly nemesis.
The Riddler's mind is twisted. Crime's no fun for him unless it means outwitting us.
Robin's right. The Riddler's up to something tricky. Better let us handle this. It smells like a trap.
You know, I got to tell you, there's nothing worse than starting your day with a cup of coffee and an exploding cape. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Mr. Drew Monroe from KDKA TV2 Productions, his band, and also starring in the upcoming Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rises. Boy, I got to tell you, still dark outside getting up this early in the morning, huh?
It's fun. Well, of course, I'm with the most interesting man on radio.
That's because I've been pulled over by the police more times than not. But listen, I got to tell you, you know, I admire you so much for what you do, Drew. And we joke, but I don't think people realize, in my humble opinion, I really believe that you could have been a big-time director. I look at the world differently, and I was telling my young son, Robbie, last night in Eva's, I was doing a bit of babysitting and having a grand old time. Boy, you know you're getting old when that's a big night out and you enjoy yourself. But I saw just yesterday morning, driving into work, in the distance, the plant that actually put food on our table for 40-some years that my dad worked at, and the beautiful Beaver River just adjacent with the moon glistening off the water. And I thought to myself, now that's a shot that Drew Monroe would like. Drew, do you just love what you do?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I love making TV commercials. I love directing, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. It's also fun to watch the real guys do what they do, and I had a chance to do that last Sunday when I was invited to be one of the extras, one of the paid extras on the Dark Knight Rises movie, which was a lot of fun, and a lot of Pittsburghers, of course, have had a chance to be part of that.
All right, let's talk about, first off, business. What does this movie mean to the city of Pittsburgh? Some say not as much as one would think. The trouble's not worth it. I got to tell you, even though I'm not a huge Batman fan, I am a fan of Pittsburgh, and I think it's a great thing.
I do, too. I think just in terms of the prestige, you know, that a movie this big, you know, would come to this town. I mean, let's face it, this is the biggest movie to ever film on location here. The estimated budget is like $250 million, which is a lot of money. Without a doubt, the biggest film to come to town. And, of course, you know, it means a bump for the local economy. These people all have to, you know, stay at hotels, and they eat food, and they buy all the materials that they buy to build all the things they need to do. And they, of course, pay special fees, you know, to block off streets and to hire local police and firemen. I mean, you know, it's definitely a bump. And you know, you never know quite what that amounts to in terms of, you know, a dollar figure. But, you know, it's it definitely helps out, and I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's, you know, we've seen lately a lot of movies come through town, so I think that we're back on the map in terms of Hollywood and what they recognize, again, as being a really great location.
Do you think, though, that there's something about Pittsburgh's charm that really has induced Hollywood? What separates, because is it the scenery, the backdrop of the hills of western Pennsylvania, how you can basically mold it into any city, the people, easy access, or all of the above?
I think it's all the above. I think there's so many options here in terms of, you know, where you can shoot. It is the location, you know, the hillsides, the, you know, the rivers, the urban environment, it's all that. I think as far as the state is concerned, you know, it's tax breaks that make it worthwhile for these guys to bring their production here. And also, I'll tell you one other thing, too, that kind of gets skipped over is the fact that I think that we have a lot of local people here, a lot of technicians who are really, really first rate. And when these movie companies come to town, you know, they hire these men and women to come out and be on the crew of these movies. I was on site on Sunday last week, and I saw three of the guys that I work with who work on my crew occasionally to shoot TV commercials here in town. And when the movies, you know, arrive, they're high on the list to be hired to help out. And these folks are good. They're first rate, and that's another thing that Pittsburgh can be very proud of.
All right, when we come back, pyrotechnics, wearing winter clothes when it's 120 degrees in the shade, and more importantly about some of the stars of this movie. But is Hollywood as magical? I got to ask you. I mean, I love Hollywood. I love what it's all about. But is it as magical, Drew, when you're actually behind the scenes seeing these things put together, or does it look like an old Bell and Howe home movie?
No, nothing like a home movie, and we'll talk about this. But yeah, some of the stuff that they did in terms of the special effects was absolutely, you know, stunning. And believe me, I'm a person that has, you know, worked around the business for a long time, and you know, you kind of get jaded a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you walk onto a set like the one they had built at Heinz Field, and your jaw drops open.
All right, listen, ladies and gentlemen, this is the guy. He's Drew Monroe. We'll be back more. Batman, The Dark Knight Rises, when we continue on The Rob Pratt Show on KDK. It's 515, 66 degrees.
If it's happening now, you're hearing it now. Only on The Voice of Pittsburgh. News Radio 1040, KDKA. You're locked in to The Rob Pratt Show. It's what Pittsburgh's talking about. News Radio 1020, KDKA.
You know what this means, don't you?
The Riddler.
Right, Chief O'Hara, the Riddler. That infernal prince of puzzlers who's outwitted this a dozen times. What about it, men? O'Hara? Spectre Bash? Any of you think you can handle him? I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
See, Drew, one thing you're going to have to understand, we don't have the same budget that Larry Richard has during the week. So, you know, we have to bring out the Adam West stuff from the 60s. But isn't it amazing how that television show has spawned really all of this, whether you like it or not? And it hasn't done the most for a lot of careers. I mean, George Clooney, Batman didn't work. Michael Douglas really didn't work. Christian Bale, it has worked. But it's hard to believe that we're talking about the same storyline, Batman, when you look at the cartoon-like television show of the 60s compared to these $200 million-plus motion pictures of today.
Oh, yeah, what an enduring story. And you're right, it goes from the corny, campy, kind of fun TV show with Adam West, you know, you've been playing the clips, but then gets completely, you know, retold in 1989 with the Michael Keaton version that was done with Tim Burton. And that, at the time, was a very, very big movie, and it really, you know, changed the whole feel of it. It was, you know, still fun, but, you know, more serious and visually just breathtaking, you know. And then they had run the course, as you had mentioned, with George Clooney and had run, you know, the series. You had thought pretty much run the course with it. And then suddenly comes Christopher Nolan, who does the whole dark, you know, gothic novel approach and really makes it much more serious and much more dark and interesting. And now is finishing up his trilogy, you know, and has totally redefined it. So you're right. I think that there's just something about that character that never goes away and is wide open. And I'm sure this isn't going to be the last, you know, Batman movie that we'll see, but it'll certainly be the last one in this series, you know, with this cast and crew.
All right. Why do you think they just continue to turn these cast and crew over? Then we'll get to you being in this Batman movie. Why do you think they just look for a fresh approach, fresh faces every few years? Why argue with success?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I think that part of it is a problem in Hollywood that, you know, I don't see a lot of fresh new ideas. I see a lot of, you know, series and franchises being rebooted. And I think let's look at the 007, you know, James Bond series with Daniel Craig. They've kind of restarted that series with a new character and kind of freshened it up with a whole different look, a whole different feel. They're now about to do that with the Spider-Man series. You probably heard about that. Sam Raimi decided not to come back and make a fourth Spider-Man movie, and so at this point the company decided to bring in, you know, a new director, a new actor, a new star, and basically go back and retell this, you know. And it just seems like they want to just kind of recycle this stuff. And I'm sure the new Spider-Man will be a little different. Of course, they're shooting it in 3D and all that. But, here's a case where, you know, they're just going back and just, you know, recycling old material again and again. Now, in the case of Batman, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that what they're doing with this story this time really eclipses everything that was done in the past. I mean, The Dark Knight, the last movie, I thought was spectacular. I really, really liked it. I thought it was a great film, not just a good film, but a great film. Really well written. I mean, the visuals were stunning. Parts of it were shot in IMAX. At this time around, the whole movie is going to be shot in IMAX. So visually, you know, it's dazzling. But I really thought on every level that Christopher Nolan really passionately got into this and poured his heart and soul into this project, and I think it really shows on the big screen.
All right, here we go. The massive special effects, and I hear they are better than a Zambelli fireworks show, and that's a stretch. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I just want to back up a little bit and mention that, you know, last Sunday there were 200 of us who were brought in, you know, hired to be extras that day for, you know, some crowd cutaways. And, we showed up at 5 in the morning at the Mellon Arena to be bused down to the location at Heinz Field. The instructions we received mentioned to bring, cold weather gear, you know, winter coats and winter clothes, gloves, hats, because the scene takes place in the wintertime, or at least in late fall at a football game. It was quite something to see. You know, you got in there, got the wardrobe stuff, and, you know, kind of got onto the field probably around 7:30. And immediately when you walked onto the field, I mean, you know, and I'm not giving away anything here, I think, that people haven't seen in the news coverage and the helicopter, you know, aerial shots of what they had done to Heinz Field. But the first thing that struck you was the fact that they had done a special effect in which they had built a part of the field to look as though half the field was probably heaved up as the result of an explosion or something that had literally lifted the ground up probably about 6 feet off the field. And standing there looking at it with a naked eye, I got to tell you, Rob, it was absolutely, I was just breathtaking. I mean, I just stared and stared at it in terms of the detail and the realism, and you couldn't tell that it was fake in any way, shape, or form. I mean, the ground literally looked like it sort of had, you know, strata to it. There was, it looked like it was wet a couple of feet down and then dry. There were, looked like there were broken off pipes. The field was completely, you know, recreated to look like it blended in with the actual surface of Heinz Field, in every detail. I mean, when you're standing just, maybe 30 yards away from it, I mean, it absolutely looked legit. And it was the kind of thing that you thought to yourself, you know, they probably just would do this as a digital effect in post-production, and they didn't. You know, they went to the trouble of building this. And, of course, you know, the questions hit you. When did they build this? How did they build it? How long did it take them to construct this? And who does this stuff? But it was absolutely stunning. And when you think about, you know, the art of special effects, and you keep thinking these days that everything is done with computers, here's an example of some technicians who were absolutely the top of their game and created something that was just stunning to look at. You know, so just that. You know, if I'd seen that and nothing else that day, it would have been something to really talk about. But you know, then they proceeded, of course, you know, to stage some action. They were introducing a major villain that day, and the crowd had to react to that and some things that were going on the field. There were pyrotechnics going on later in the afternoon. There were some blowing things up, you know, at the stadium. And another case, too, where, you know, you would wonder whether or not they would do that digitally. And in a couple of cases, you know, they decided to do real explosions with real crowd reaction. That was pretty amazing. You know, even Dan Rooney showed up at one point, was on the field. And we were,
well, looking for somebody to replace Ike Taylor with a broken thumb.
Yeah. Well, we were wondering that day whether or not he was trying to keep an eye on everybody and make sure they didn't blow up his you know, super box. You know?
Yeah, whatever you do, I've had enough problems with my turf. Don't do any more damage to it. Hey, there's so much I want to talk to you about this movie, but also I'm so glad you're going to talk about some of the movies that are out now, because that's something that, in my opinion, you do better than anyone else, and I've never seen somebody put so much work into it. But I have to ask, how's the family, your dad?
Oh, my dad's doing fine. Thanks very much. At home, doing well, and and getting stronger and doing some rehab and having a good summer.
A proud veteran who we love dearly, and a big shout-out to Mr. Monio back there in Butler, the home of the Bantam Jeep, celebrating its 70th anniversary, Pullman Park, and, another place that does hot dogs. Maybe not as good as the Brighton Hot Dog Shop, but they still do hot dogs in beautiful Butler, Pennsylvania. Hey, Drew, what about the Stars? What kind of money are they looking at, like a Christian Bale? Is he going to make something in the neighborhood of 20 mil plus a percentage? What's he going to make for doing this?
I'm guessing. I really haven't tracked down, what they're paying him on this movie. But again, yeah, he is the centerpiece of this film. And I know he's making a ton of money on this thing. Some interesting notes here on this, by the way. The director, Christopher Nolan, who is amazing. His other movies include Memento, Insomnia. Again, the other Batman movies, Batman Begins, The Dark Knight. He was the guy last summer who made the movie Inception. He's the first guy to direct more than two Batman films. Everybody else has only done two and then moved on to something else. He's the second person to direct a superhero trilogy. The only other person to do that was Sam Raimi with his Spider-Man series. So that's kind of interesting. Also, Christian Bale, who we're just talking about, is the first actor to play Batman in three live-action versions. Everybody else at that point had made two and kind of moved on. So some new things happening here. But the cast is amazing. Christian Bale, Anne Hathaway.
And by the way, I've been the one walking around town going, here, kitty, kitty. Here, kitty, kitty. She is, I love her. She's the Audrey Hepburn of her generation. I love her.
That's a good comparison. And, of course, she was here in town a few years ago doing Love and Other Drugs. So she's been in Pittsburgh and has worked here before. Also, Tom Hardy, who plays Bane in this movie, was in Pittsburgh, shooting a movie called Warrior, which is coming out on September 9th. So some connections here with people that have already worked in town. And again, another great tribute to Pittsburgh and what a great town it is, and the fact that part of this cast has already been here working in other movies, and that's just how active and how busy Pittsburgh has been.
Listen, you know a lot about Hollywood. How quickly will word get back if this is a smooth shoot to the rest of Hollywood and say, hey, look, this is a place you may want to consider?
Oh, I think that they're already talking about that already. I think that, at this point, the town has been accommodating. I think that it's everything that they wanted it to be. I was just uptown yesterday. I took a break and walked up near Smithfield Street where they were shooting some street scenes that they had blocked off. And I don't know if you had seen any of that stuff, but... they were working up there with artificial snow, which these days is made out of shredded paper. In the old days in Hollywood, there's that old joke about, and not a joke, but they used to use cornstarch, for snow in some of the old, classic films. Now it's actually biodegradable paper, but it looks absolutely real. I walked around some of the streets, where they were shooting scenes with the Batmobile tumbler, the one that looks like it's painted, with camouflage. And they were running around doing scenes with a special camera car and a special camera mount. And I got to tell you, looking at it just with the naked eye, it looked absolutely legit. I mean, the snow and those scenes looked like, we were shooting in the middle of January. And, it's just fun to see what these guys can do. But, again, everything that they need in terms of, the streets, the urban locations, it's all here. And again, it's a $250 million budget. I think you're going to see some things in this movie that are going to knock you out of your seat. By the way, I mentioned, I think briefly, that the whole movie this time is being shot in IMAX, which is amazing. Christopher Nolan, and his cinematographer were really pressured to make this movie in 3D, and they decided they didn't really want to do that. I think that was a smart choice, personally. But they did want to shoot in IMAX.
All right, let me jump in here. You got lots more to talk about. I want to get this break in, but when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the movies that are out for the latter part of the summer of 2011. An extra in the new Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rises. Drew Monio, my guest on KDKX.
Now we'll talk. It's what Pittsburgh's talking about.
America is talking.
It's the Rob Pratt Show.
Talking and talking and talking.
It's all about dogs. News Radio 1020 KDKA.
My life is really complex.
When freak terrorizes, wait till they get a load of me.
I think that was one of our old program directors here at KDK. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome back Drew Monio. Drew, before we move on to some of the great movies that are coming out and are already out, just your final thoughts about Batman. Will it be a smash hit? Are there as many Batman lovers out there as there are Trekkies? And will this thing kind of live on for generations to come, do you think?
Oh, I think it will. And in terms of this movie, you know, I think the last film is going to be tough to top. But if anybody can do it, I think that person is Christopher Nolan. And again, the writing in the last movie I thought was so solid in terms of, you know, where it went in terms of the dark psychology, this whole exploration of good and evil and everything that made it just tantalizingly good. So I have high hopes that this is going to be, you know, the real capper for this this trilogy. So I can't wait. I am very, very excited about this. And by the way, you were just doing some Steelers coverage about the preseason game. You know, the fictional team that plays at the stadium in the movie, the team's name is the Gotham City Rogues. Take a wild guess at what their team colors would be.
Black and gold?
Yeah, they intelligently went with that. They decided to just go with that. So,
you know, I'm being haunted by black and gold. Everywhere I go, there is black and gold cars. There are black and gold people as far as their clothes are concerned. We truly live in a black and gold nation, don't we?
Well, in this town we do, that's for sure. And I just thought it was so funny that they decided not to try to swim upstream here. You know, they decided to just go with that. And you know, the instructions when we arrived at the at Heinz Field, that they were, you know, were to wear black and gold clothing. Of course, no team logos or anything like that. But still, I don't think anybody had a problem reaching in their closet and coming up with those colors.
Hey, a bucket list. Would you ever like to get a speaking part? I mean, maybe like actually on screen, page of script in a major motion picture before Drew Monroe goes to that great casting couch in the sky?
Absolutely. That'd be a lot of fun. I think that's everybody's dream, you know. But I've had a lot of luck here. You know, over the years, I was fortunate enough to have a really small part in Silence of the Lambs. I had a little bit part in the movie Hoffa when it was here in town. So, you know, I've had some fun on some of these movie sets, and it's just great to see what goes on behind the scenes. And I'll tell you what, I think in the years ahead, there's gonna be a lot more of this stuff happening because of the success of this movie and what it's done for Pittsburgh.
You know what's amazing? When you think about the old studio days, how they did all of this on the back lot at Warner Brothers, isn't it amazing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, part of that was the technology back then that, you know, you had to shoot on those sound stages because of, you know, the camera technology, the audio technology. And it's only kind of in the 60s, you know, the late 60s, you have movies like Easy Rider that finally were able to use, you know, 16-millimeter lightweight cameras and the Nagra recorders, you know, that could actually get you out of the studio and, you know, out onto the roads to shoot a movie like that, you know, on location across the country. So once that happened, you know, it just opened up a whole new look and a whole new style of filmmaking, and we're seeing that today, and I think it's just great. It's really liberating.
Well, one of these days, we're going to get you in here just to talk the golden age of Hollywood, because I'm such a big fan of it. One more question I want to ask about that, then we'll talk about the movies. They talk about Jimmy Stewart in Winchester 73, the first guy to say, you know what, I want a percentage of what you're going to make because I'm bankable. They're all doing it today. We saw what happened with George Lucas and those young stars, Carrie Fisher and others, as far as getting a percentage of that film. But was Jimmy Stewart really one that broke the mold?
I think so. I think that was a good example, to be honest with you. And another one that I'm aware of, I did a workshop years ago with a guy named Robert Wise, you know, who is the director of Sound of Music and West Side Story and the original Day the Earth Stood Still. And when he made Sound of Music, at the time the story was that they offered a percentage of the profits to Julie Andrews, and she wasn't convinced that this movie was going to be a big hit, so she wanted to be paid, I think it was at the time, like $100,000 up front, and that's all she got. And Wise, I think, at one point got something like 10% or something like that. It was a huge chunk of the revenue, but, you know, he partially financed it and, you know, was the director, and, of course, that made him, you know, a multimillionaire after that. But, you know, it started out with people who really believed in the work and said, you know what, I'm willing to take just a small fee up front, but I believe it's going to be successful, and I'll hold off and take part of that.
All right, here we go. 30 minutes or less, and we're not talking about your pizza being cold. We're talking body parts exploding. Explain this to me.
Yeah, this is a disturbing kind of a movie here. You know, it's being pitched, you know, as a comedy. It's from the director of a movie called Zombieland, which starred Jesse Eisenberg. He is also the star of this movie. This one is a comedy about a guy who's a pizza delivery guy. Finds himself involved in this plot. There were two other guys who were trying to murder someone. A guy wants to get his father's inheritance. They want to hire a hitman to kill his father, but then they need money to hire the hitman. So at this point in time, they get this unsuspecting pizza delivery guy And they strap a bomb to him and get him to rob a bank so they can get the money. So it's kind of a complicated plot. It seems bizarre, but as you know, living in this area back in 2003, it's pretty much exactly what happened with a guy named Brian Wells up in Erie, PA. And in that case, they had strapped a bomb around his neck. And at the time, everybody thought that it was just so bizarre that it was some kind of a hoax, you know, and it turned out it wasn't. The bomb was detonated, you know, by remote control, and he died. And, you know, so to use that as the central story element, you know, for a comedy, I thought was just a bad choice, just a really bad choice. And anybody who can remember that incident, I think it's tough to watch this movie and not be a little, you know, disturbed by that.
All right. Now, let's move on to our next flick, Crazy Stupid. Well, that describes me, but then there's another point that I missed here, Love. So tell me, Crazy Stupid Love, what that's all about.
Well, this is Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Julianne Moore, Emma Stone, and in a small part with Marissa Tomei. But Carell plays a guy who's a husband and a father who's, you know, finds that his wife suddenly wants to divorce him, and he's on his own. He's trying to adjust to being single. It bumps into a guy, a smooth-talking, kind of a young, handsome guy played by Ryan Gosling, who's going to guide him and advise him and get him back into the world of romance. And, you know, it's funny. It's a comedy of multiple mismatched, you know, love connections. I think Ryan Gosling turned in, you know, a pretty good performance here and surprised some people that, you know, to the fact that he could do comedy as well as he does. Lots of funny moments here. I just felt that in this case, a lot of the funny stuff I thought was already in the movie trailers. And that kind of spoiled it a little bit. But overall, liked it, and, you know, I'd recommend it. But, yeah, that's one of the, you know, one of the funny, you know, romantic comedies this summer.
Are you a little disappointed with what Hollywood's doing? Because, you know, I'm hearing more and more TV remakes. You know, I just, there's got to be some better scripts out there, or we have just become just such a nation of mush that this is what we want to see when we pay $20 to go to the movies.
Well, you know what? You bring up a good point, and I've been saying this for years now, that Hollywood has really gotten into a rut, and, you know, I think it's all about, you know, return on investment, and I get that. You know, I mean, Hollywood is really a business. You know, people forget at some point in time that it's a business. They have to make money. And like any business, they're looking for some kind of a guarantee. And in their minds, you know, something that's been successful before, you know, is bankable, you know. And that's why we see so much stuff, you know, being recycled, you know, whole movie series being done again and again and again. And certainly that's one way to approach it. But I think what's missing these days, you know, you were talking about the golden days of Hollywood, but, you know, the studio heads back in those days, in the 30s and 40s, were people who were pretty sharp and were able to anticipate what the country really wanted to see. And they were pretty innovative. I think they really put it out there and took some chances and made some great movies and didn't repeat themselves, you know, and try to come up with fresh ideas. And I think there was more of a spirit of creativity and risk-taking, you know, back in those days. And I think as the studios got bigger, you know, that kind of went away. And then these days, I just think that everybody's in a panic, you know, to do something that might fail at the box office. So unfortunately, they're going back to what they think is solid ground and, you know, and a formula that can't miss. And unfortunately, in some cases, you know, it does. And, you know, you're asking for it when you do remakes. I mean, people are inevitably going to compare what you did with the original. In some cases, the original movie got it right the first time.
All right. Love having Drew Monroe here. Could do it every week, ladies and gentlemen. It's good stuff. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Much more as far as what's happening in Hollywood. Harry Potter is back. Also, the Green Lantern, Captain America, the First Avenger, and the Tree of Life. Next.
Weekdays 9 to noon.
Anything different makes us uncomfortable.
Marty Griffin.
Why does this happen?
News Radio 1020.
Very few guns, very little violence.
KDKA. The Rob Pratt Show. News Radio 1020. KDKA.
All right, we're back. Cowboys and Aliens. Drew Monroe on KDK, 66 degrees, 548. Tell me about this Cowboys and Aliens flicks. I've seen the trailers, but it's, look, this isn't Rawhide we're talking about. Maybe it's Rawhide meets E.T., but explain it to me.
Well, you know, they're looking certainly for the shock value of that title. You know, and the first time I heard it, I just went, what? You know, and that's exactly what they want. You know, it's it was based on a graphic novel. At first you go, wait a minute, you know, this is too crazy of an idea. But then I heard that the director was going to be Jon Favreau, the guy who directed Iron Man, the first two episodes of the first two installments of Iron Man, and he turned down the opportunity to make Iron Man 3 to make this movie. So I thought it had possibilities. And, of course, there was the cast. Harrison Ford came aboard, Daniel Craig, Olivia Wilde, and I thought, okay, this might be okay. So I sort of, you know, the jury was out. The movie is set in Arizona in 1873. Craig plays this cowboy, this mysterious stranger who wanders into town with a strange contraption, you know, on his wrist. He has no memory of who he is or what happened to him. And before you know it, but before the townspeople can figure out, you know, what's going on with him, you know, there are these strange vehicles sweeping out of the sky and abducting some of the townspeople. And at the time, of course, nobody knows anything about aliens back in the Old West, so they think they are demons that are snatching people up. And so suddenly they've got to deal with something that they can barely, you know, understand. This is also from, you know, the producers on this movie were Steven Spielberg and Ron Howard, who had some creative input to this. As I mentioned, based on a graphic novel. You know, it seemed like it had so much going for it. It was one of those things that could either work or not work. In my mind, in my estimation, it really never got to the potential of what it could have been. I just I hate to say it, didn't think it worked. I thought Harrison Ford's character was pretty one-dimensional and kind of flat. Daniel Craig, I thought, could have done a lot more with it. I think the writing was the problem here. And it just never really kind of explores the possibility of what it could be.
I've often wondered, too, and I've got to type and surf the Internet just to keep up with you. I don't know how you do this stuff all the time. Plus, I hold down a full-time job, family man, a little bit of everything. I mean, Drew, literally, when we were down in Gateway Center, was always slaving over a computer terminal. Does this stuff just change literally on a dime, second by second in Hollywood? Script changes, cast member changes, budgets go up, they go down, stuff gets left on the cutting room floor. I mean, is this just a business that never stands still?
You know, what's funny, you kind of triggered just one thing I want to mention. I did mention you know, Robert Wise a while ago, who I had studied with for a week and had done a workshop with him. And he was talking about making the original Star Trek movie, I mean, the very first one that they brought to the big screen. And he mentioned, in terms of the chaos that surrounded that movie, that day by day they were rewriting the script as the movie was being made. And he said that he would check over the next day's script and go to bed at, like, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock. And he said in the middle of the night, he would hear something being slid under his door of his hotel, would wake up in the morning, and it was yet another script draft, you know, with changes, you know, that had been done, like, overnight. And he said it was just completely, you know, chaotic. They couldn't decide what they wanted to do. They were, you know, just in, you know, in chaos mode. And I think the movie kind of reflected that. But, yeah, I think that... and, you know, it's funny. I say that, and, of course, you know, you could probably say the same thing about the movie Casablanca, you know, that, you know, the legendary story was that they didn't know what the ending of that was going to be while the movie was being filmed, you know. And, of course, that turned out to be okay. But you're right. In general, I think Hollywood is, you know, kind of in spin, you know, mode at this point, trying to figure out, you know, what direction they should go and, you know, what audiences really want. And I think at this point they're finding out that one of the things they don't want are the 3D movies, I think, that have jammed the theaters.
Enough of that.
Yeah.
But you know you're getting old when you can actually see better with 3D glasses. Hey, listen, 5:52, we got to hustle up here. And, Drew, I want to get you back in prime time around the holidays because that's one of my favorite time of year to talk to you. Sure. Harry Potter, please tell me it's over.
Oh, well, it is, of course. This is the final installment, the eighth movie in the series. Although, you know, there's another case where, you know, they were onto a franchise that was just a gold mine. I mean, I think the movies collectively made about $6 billion worldwide. So, and, you know, I will give them credit. I thought the movies were very consistent. I thought that there was really an attempt to bring these to the screen with as much artistic integrity as they could give it. You know, technically they were brilliant. Everybody loved the story. So this was kind of a no-brainer. And I think that, unfortunately, you know, Hollywood now is scratching their heads and wondering, what's the next Harry Potter? Where can we find another story?
That may never happen in this generation.
You're absolutely right. You know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, in the early films they were hoping this would happen. And, of course, you know, they did it right. They brought the same talent back. They were able to be very consistent and maintain that level of quality. But, you know, I think they capped it off. The fans seem to be very, very excited and very happy with the final installment, which, of course, was done, as we mentioned just, you know, a minute ago, in 3D. You know, the climax in this movie was really kind of shot for, you know, the 3D bang, you know, the 3D effect. But you know, it did well. But also, interestingly, you know, after it was out a week or two, you know, it had a huge opening at the box office. It also had an amazing fall in terms of the box office revenue. A week or two later, it had really kind of plummeted in terms of a record-breaking, you know, dive. And that had people kind of concerned. You know, usually a movie like this, you know, will hang on for weeks and be in the number one slot for a while. And attention quickly turned to some other movies, and audiences were out looking at other things, you know. So it still made a bunch of money. I think it was like, you know, almost like, you know, $3.5 million.
How about Harry Potter meets Rocky, or like Rambo? Maybe we can do that. Look, up against it, Green Lantern, Captain America, which I actually do want to see with my son, and the first Avenger. What are those like?
Well, I'll tell you what, of the bunch, I think Captain America, the first Avenger, was the one that really was a pleasant surprise, you know. And this is, of course, a setup for an even bigger movie coming out next summer called The Avengers. And that one's going to feature a number of superheroes, including Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, the Hulk, Hawkeye, Black Widow, are all going to be in one movie. This was kind of an interesting film. For me, it was a mix of an old movie called Rocketeer, another movie called Sky Captain and The World of Tomorrow. It had a little feel of a movie called Hellboy. These are all movies that had really interesting visuals. Interestingly, the director, a guy named Joe Johnston, was the guy who directed Rocketeer for Disney. And I think this thing has just a solid, really interesting look. You kind of get lost in this whole world that they create. And it's a retro kind of world. The story takes place in World War II. You know, America's fighting the Nazis. The main character, if you know the storyline, starts out as some 98-pound weakling who, through some government experiment, is transformed into a guy who is big and invincible. And I thought that was probably one of the biggest effects in the movie, is the fact that they took the star of the movie, Chris Evans, who is a guy who, you know, works out, is in pretty good shape, and they were able to composite his face on the body of a guy who is, you know, some skinny sort of, you know, 98-pound weakling. So for the first part of the movie, it's so bizarre. You're looking at his face, and you're thinking, my God, that's Chris Evans, but, you know, that can't be him, and it turns out it really isn't. But they do it so seamlessly that you absolutely can't tell. And, you know, we saw some of this kind of technology done a couple of years ago in the Brad Pitt movie called The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
I love that movie. Let me jump in here real quick. Sure. Tree of Life, last one.
I like this movie personally. This is from Terrence Malick, a guy who has only made like maybe four other movies: Badlands, Days of Heaven, Thin Red Line, The New World. Starred Brad Pitt and Sean Penn. A deeply personal movie about, you know, growing up in the 1950s, kind of autobiographical. Not your typical Hollywood narrative film. Very kind of artistic, little snippets of this guy's life, his memories. But he also throws in, you know, images of the birth of the universe, you know, of the age of the dinosaurs. There's a part of the movie that talks about, you know, the afterlife. I mean, really goes for the big, big questions and the big issues. And I really applaud Terrence Malick. I mean, even if people go see this and find it a little confusing, I think
right.
It is refreshingly good.
Drew, that's a wrap. Listen, thank you so much. You're the best. Come back real soon, okay?
Will do. Thanks, Rob.
He is the man, Drew Monyeau. I usually play this before I shave in the morning while I'm looking at myself in the mirror. We'll be back. Bambino believes me.